From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Well, it is Thursday, the somethingth of something, otherwise known as the 9th of February. With The Dice Men Cometh, it is episode 152, believe it or not, lads. And Leon, I'm not going to do one of those little poem things, putting board game names into otherwise normal words. And Mark, I'm not going to do a pun because I am under the age of 40.
Okay, just.
So what I am going to talk about is that welcome to the Dice Men Cometh for tonight's episode. If you have not listened to us before, welcome to an hour of everything board games, card games, dice games, role-playing games, anything that involves tables and people and throwing things at each other. It's going to be a lot of fun. We are going to be talking numerous what we've been playing this week. We have a very Australian bent, and we're going to start by talking about Kingdom of... Or Air.
Yes, let's go Kingdom of Air.
Kingdom of Air by our good friend Al, who is based up in New South Wales. We're also going to go back to the future and talk about nothing personal.
Oh, it's been a while.
Has it ever? We're also going to, Mark, you're just going to let us spend all our money on Kickstarter.
Oh, but yes.
Let us get to a song. Now, Mark, can you push that button? We will have a song and be back on the other side to talk about what we've been playing this week. Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3.
That was a song.
That was Million Dollar Loan by Death Cab for Cuties.
Right.
That was one of the... I think there was a project to write a song a day, a whole bunch of different artists in the lead up to the American election. Of course, that was a story of Donald Trump, how he... You know, made it all by himself, just apart from a small $1 million loan that he got from his dad when he started out.
Didn't we all get one of those at 18?
No, I don't
remember. You didn't get yours? Have
missed that one.
I don't recall getting that, no.
Oh, well, sucks to be you guys.
Yeah, anyway.
Anyway, Leon.
Yes, games. That's what we're here to talk about. Right, so picture this. It is PAX. We've just played Lisboa for 75 hours? No, a few hours. Great game. Bit knackered. Near the end of PAX, after 3 days of gaming and drinking and drinking and gaming. And we get a message on our Dice Men Cometh Facebook page, which of course you're all members of, from a young lad named Alan, saying, "Hello lads, big fan of the show, seen you around the con, you're all very handsome. I've got this game, got a booth, come have a look." And we went, "All right, it's on our way, why not? We'll come have a look-see."
Exactly, and this is what we do for fans.
Exactly, and the game that we saw that day was a game called Kingdom of Air, Kingmaker, and the man we met was Alan Cheshire. And this is the game that he had designed, and it's a small, quick little game that we had a couple of games of there, and was like, this is all right. You know, we get messages sometimes and we see some games, we're like, meh, meh, meh. But again, we normally like to be positive, but this game was really good, and we just didn't expect it at all. And now, luckily, it is on Kickstarter.
It sure is.
So we're going to talk about it, because we've played it more this week, and we're going to give it a proper old talking to. So, Kingdom of Air by Centennial Games and Alan Cheshire, which I just mentioned, is a game for up to 5 players. It is an elimination assassination game set in a Florentine-styled fantasy world where monarchy, mayhem, and murder will decide a new king.
Ah, doesn't that sound sexy?
It does. It is a quick and easy social backstabbing game about alliances and betrayal as you battle against your friends and enemies for the crown. Yeah, I love that.
It sounds exactly like our kind of game. I mean...
Yeah, we do love a bit of backstabby.
We are big fans of the backstabby here at the Dice Men. We are big fans of that social deduction side of things.
Yeah.
We also like yelling and screaming at each other.
Yes,
which... And we also like killing Mark.
Yes, which
all of those things are good.
Come on, guys.
Which we did a bit of. Right, so I'll explain this game. It's really, really simple. So you've got 3 cards in front of you. They're called your royal cards. But think of them more as your home base or your shields or your hit points, if you will. They're worth 5 points each if you have them, survive them to the end of the game. But if they're all gone, then you're out of the game. You're eliminated from it. And then in your hand, you have 11 cards. If you're playing with 5 people, you have 11 cards. There's one less per person you play with because out of those cards, you have an attack card for each other player that you're playing against. So in a five-player game, you have four attack cards in your hand.
Yeah, because every one of the five decks are different coloured. So there is an orange deck and a pink deck or a red deck or a blue deck or a grey deck. So you will always have an attack card for each of your opponent's colours.
Yeah, and they're pretty simple. You put them all face down. If you flip it up, the person that gets the majority of those cards against them has to lose one of their royal cards.
Oh, do they?
Yes, it's pretty simple. And I should have mentioned it before, that everyone has the exact same cards in their hand. Because then the other seven special cards are thus. There's the Jester, who you can play, who becomes one of your royal cards. He is worth 6 points at the end of the game if you still have him in your hand. He's only worth 2 points if you have him on the field. But because he joins your royal cards, he becomes like a meat shield, essentially.
Totally.
Which is the whole point of a Jester. You just throw him in front of the army before anything else. Then there is a banner. Now, the banner is only worth, I think, 2 points in your hand, but 6 points if it's on the field. And also, it gives you double the amount of votes when you're playing your attack card. So if I play a black attack card, it does 2 votes worth of damage.
And that is an incredibly powerful card to come out.
If only there was a way to get rid of them, which there is. There is the Fanatic card. Now, when you play the Fanatic card, every banner that is on the field, including your own if it's out, gets burnt.
Yes.
So you have to think strategically. I'm going to play this banner card and start voting heavily against people, and they're just going to go, well, I'm just going to burn it to the ground. But I have to think it's including their own as well. So when you play it, the whole point of this game is when you play what card. It's a whole cool thing.
Yeah. I'll have to explain that to Mark, I think, because he suffered with a bit of, lack of understanding, perhaps? That's true.
Then we have the Marshals. What the Marshals do is if you play that card, anybody that attacks you that turn gets the damage back in their face.
Yep.
It's a big old deflector shield of men carrying swords and whatnot. So they take the damage instead of you. Then there is the Seer, who's kind of similar to the Marshal, but what the Seer does is that when you play that, if there are a certain amount of attacks against you, instead of you taking the damage, the person with the second most amount of cards will take the damage instead. So kind of like the Marshals, but a little less intense. But also, the Marshals are another one that if you keep them in your hand, they're actually worth 8 points at the end of the game.
Yeah, wow.
Then
which is a lot of points in this game, it has to be said.
The base, the three crown cards you've got in front of you, the royal cards, sorry, they're only worth 5 at the end as well. So then you've got the coin, that if you play the coin, you get to take a card back from your discard pile. Because once you've played any of these cards, except the attack ones, they always come back. But any of the other special cards, once you've played them, they go in your discard, and then that's where they sit.
Yes.
Unless you play the coin. However, someone could then play the Thief. If you haven't noticed, every one of these cards has an equal and opposite reaction card. The Thief steals everybody's coins. They don't get to then draw a card, but then you get to draw a card instead from your discard pile.
As a benefit, because the Thief has stolen stuff.
And that's it. That's all that there is. And all these different cards, as I said, if you play them, if you have them in your hand at the end of the game, they're worth a certain amount of points. Some of them, if you have them in the field, are also worth a certain amount of points. If they're in your discard pile, they're worth nothing. Yeah. So everybody puts a card down, face down, and until the final person puts their card down, people can change their minds.
Which I love. I love that mechanic where you can go, I know exactly what I'm going to do this round. I'm going to attack Leon because Leon only has one royalty left in his tableau.
Yep.
I'm going to play the Leon colour to kill him. And then Leon has done something else and talked to some people and said, oh, I'm actually going to do this, guys. Why don't you come along for the ride? And you have to change your decision all the time.
Because this game really encourages table talk. And it is literally like a Game of Thrones series in like 5 minutes, because you're making like political and military
alliances
here, there and everywhere, and then you turn on them seconds later because you can pretty much do whatever you want.
Yes.
So you keep playing until you've knocked out every player except for two of you. When there's two of you left and everyone else's royal cards have been taken out, then you add up the cards in your royal pile as well as what's in your hand. And then the person with the most amount of points is the winner.
Yep.
So it's a very simple game. It takes about 5 minutes, but it's a game that there's quite a lot of depth to it and can be played over and over again. The best comparison is a game I'll probably mention a few times in this conversation is Coup.
Yeah.
It's very similar. It's not very similar in mechanics, but in the style and the place it sits in my mind. People that like Coup, I think, would really dig this because there's the same kind of, it's pretty simple, but the meta game behind it and the table talk is where it'll get everybody.
Yeah, exactly right. And I remember being on that Sunday afternoon at PAX where Al was describing it to us, and he said that the most common comparison was a mesh between Coup and Love Letter.
Yeah.
Because there was the hidden identity stuff of Coup. There was a lot of secret roles in the Love Letter side of things.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, day. What I really enjoyed about it is how simple it was to teach.
Yeah.
How simple it was to pick up and to play, and that's great. But also that it did offer you the option to have a really good chat around the table.
Yeah.
In saying that, it also allows you the complete opposite of that, to be able to play your own little game and not talk to anyone, not be suckered in by all those sweet tones of Mark Rickard's voice and just ignore him completely and go, you know what, I'm just going to do what I think is right. I'll probably die, but at least I'll have a lot of fun doing it.
I actually don't even know if we got really told that much about. We literally got to the booth and they gave us a deck of cards and went, there you go, lads, there are your 11 cards. Let's go from there. I was actually talking to Alan today and he sent me a few thoughts that I wanted to share with everybody. When he was designing this game, he wanted to have a mixture of chess and 14th century tarot cards. That's more where the art style comes from.
Sure.
And the TV show Survivor. Now, I'll get to that one at the end, because when he mentioned that in a message, I thought... He said Survivor, and I thought, is that a game I've never heard of? Because that's weird. But he meant the TV show. But he meant chess in the fact that you both start with the same stuff, but you're slowly losing your resources. But depending on the way you play, people will lose resources at a different rate. But he also wanted to have a game that, say, like Magic the Gathering, where you get a hand, you get this card that's really, really awesome, you can't play it straight away. You've got to build up all your mana and all this other kind of other stuff, and then you play it, and then somebody plays a counter spell or whatever else, and then it's just gone.
Sure.
Which is fine, but it can be annoying as hell. Whereas this, again, everyone's got the same amount of stuff, you'll have the same amount of options, and there's no, you have to pay this to play this card. You can play whatever you want, whenever you want. And no one... Well, there's counter cards to it, but then you can always get them back anyway.
Yeah, and I really like the fact that everyone's got the same deck, you're always countering each other, because that's exactly where the chess side of things comes into it. There are a crap ton of games where everyone has the same sort of deck and you're all choosing your actions that you're going to do. You think of Race for the Galaxy. And what's that Mars one that we played not too long ago that you bought, where everyone's got the same 11 cards and they do actions?
Oh, Mission Red Planet.
Mission Red Planet, yeah. That one. You know, there's a whole bunch of them. But what I like about this is that it's all done in such a compact time frame, is that it doesn't matter whether you cock up or it doesn't matter whether your strategy goes out the door, because ultimately what you're really doing is you're trying to play the player and not the cards that they have.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about it. There's a lot of poker in that regard, is that there is so much bluffing going on and there's so much bravado going on, especially from you, Leon.
Yeah.
It's a small box game.
Yeah.
And it just works.
Yeah. And this is actually the 10th game that Alan has said that he's designed. But this is the one he felt the most excited about. And they thought this is the most complete to move into it. Now, the Survivor TV show comparison. This is what he meant. What he meant was that in that show, people form alliances and whatever else through the show. And people get voted off as it goes along. But when it comes down to the end, when it comes down to the final of the show, the two survivors at the end of it, everyone that's been eliminated there becomes the jury, and they pick who played the game the best.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't happen in this game in the sense that the people that have been defeated don't go, well, he played the best, he's the winner. But the cards that you have in your hand, as well as on the table, that kind of represents that. The person that... You can't just be racing to try and be the last two there, because that's not going to do you any good. You need to have got there, as well as made an impression by the cards that you've played, to have the most amount of points.
Yeah, no, I think that's a completely valid point.
Yeah, so when he said it, I was like, that's crazy. But then he also went on the fact that, from a thematic point of view, this is obviously like a fantasy game. When you have people in your hand still, like, say, like if you've still got the marshals in your hand, that represents that you would have had the military on your side in your kingdom. If you'd had the thief, that represents, like, kind of the peasant uprising, the underground, a seer, religion, a jester for the entertainment of the city, which can also play a big part in revolutions and things. And when he mentioned that to me, I thought, I'd never even thought of that at all. But he specifically did that as a little extra thing to make it a bit more thematic, as opposed to just random fantasy nonsense.
And that's why you play games and not design them, Leon.
Yes, exactly. So, you've already said your thoughts. Mark, have you got anything to say before I get onto my thorn?
Yeah, so look, I really enjoyed this game. I, of course, didn't really enjoy the fact that you guys were basically, clearly, with Trent's urging, were just going to wipe me out right from the start. But what I did think was great was there were a number of ways to stop being attacked. And it was all about the sort of the bluff, the counter bluff and the double bluff of when you played a particular card. So, you know, getting your banner out not too early because, and I can't remember which card it was.
The Fanatic.
The Fanatic, that's right, that wiped out all the banners.
Yep.
So I think it was Trent who played his banner very early, and clearly it was not going to last. But, you know, the fact that there were a number of different defense cards you can use, the fact that there's a way to get at least one of your cards back, and it's all about reading the other players and working out what they're going to do and what they're not going to do.
Yeah, for things like Trent got his banner out early. Someone got the Fanatic out then to burn that down. But that means Trent can then quickly go, I'll play the coin, get it back,
yes,
play it in the later rounds, put it out, and I've got 6 points in front of me.
Yeah.
And people of Fanatics are all in their discard pile because I can see them from here.
Mm.
Garth, do you have anything else to say before I get to
Oh, look, the only thing is, and this is an inherent, I'm not going to say a weakness, but it's an inherent thing about this style of game, is that it is completely open to card counting. You know, if someone has a great memory for this kind of stuff, you will quite easily be able to remember who's got what cards left in their hand.
But isn't it actually about that you discard them in such a way that everyone can see all the cards that have been discarded, so actually you don't have to count?
Well, I hope, I don't know. You guys were all keeping your own discard pile pretty secret going on. But the joy is, and the reason I don't care about it, is because it's done in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, if you're playing a mega long game where it really, really mattered because you'd been going for 2 hours, I'd have an issue with that. But I don't, because this is just good fun, and any excuse to sit around a table and just laugh and talk and see people's plans crumble to the ground and have your own plan work and then really just be hammered by your opponents. It just has that really fun interaction that I love.
So this was a game that we played before playing Nothing Personal, which was perfect to kind of set the mood. But as I mentioned before, with a game like Coup and a game like Love Letter, they're the same. You play them in 10 minutes, but that 10 minutes can turn into 3 hours. It if can. You're with a good group of friends that have the same type of mindset and like these kind of games, like I have a friend of ours, Josh and John, who we've talked about before on the show, and even been on the show, Josh, they play Coup during their work break from time to time with the same group of people, and they did this for months. So the meta game they had between all of them and knowing each other's styles and all those kind of things was really insane.
Yeah.
Right, so my final thoughts on the game. I'm probably the most positive out of everybody about this game. I think it's really, really good. And full disclosure, we've got a quote of ours on their Kickstarter page.
We do.
I just wanted to flat out say we didn't get paid to do that. Just needed to say that now before I say all these positive things. We don't get paid for anything. We get paid with positivity, and that's about it.
We really don't get paid for anything.
Yeah, I was going to say, if we didn't have such a positive experience with Alan of PAX, and been quite impressed with that game just in a very short window then, we probably wouldn't have followed up to get a copy and to play it again and to talk about it.
So the reason I wanted to get all those out of the way is because I think this is the thing. Every person that's listened to this show, I think you should back this game on Kickstarter. I can't force you into doing it, but I think you really should for several different reasons. One, like I said, it's in the same ballpark as your Love Letter and your Coup, and not in the sense that it's, well, it is in the sense that it's a similar game. I think it's as good a quality as them. And those games have sold between them thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of copies. And I would love to see this game do the same thing. At the moment, it hasn't even quite got to its first leg of the Kickstarter, which I think is an absolute crime, because it is a game that I think if it got out there and even got in the hands of like a bigger distributor, it could be massive. And I'm sure they've got expansions in mind and other additions in mind, so I think it could be huge. But also, an important thing for us, which most people do know, is that we're Australian. And I think it is very, very important to support our own, especially somebody that does something good. I'm not saying go out and back everything on Kickstarter that's Australian. No, I don't. Because some of it is absolutely rubbish. But this is a good game that could compete with the big boys if given a chance. So I, that's my spiel.
It's $25 including postage.
And what was that? That's that awesome next tier as well?
Yeah, the other one that I liked, which I still, I like the name, which is, oh, where is it? The one KOA game plus one extra game for a friend. But for $42, you get a game and you get to give a game to a mate anywhere in the world, including postage. And that's phenomenal.
Yeah, so you can send a copy to them at a discounted rate. There's also another, there's five different kinds of box for this game. So like a retail page, you could get all them, or just for yourself and then hand them out to friends. This is perfect stocking stuffer, even though it's nowhere near Christmas. But it's a thing that I think that game that a lot of people should at least look at and consider, and it could fit into everyone's collection. It's something we should get behind.
All right, well, that is Kingdom of Air Kingmaker by Al Cheshire, and is it Centennial Games?
Centennial, yes.
Yeah, so look, fantastic little Kickstarter. Mark will probably talk about it in the Kickstarter again. Let's throw to a song. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3.
That was King for a Day by XTC. How appropriate on Edge Radio 99.3 FM and the Dice Men Cometh. Lads.
Yes.
We played a game the other day, which is arguably the Dice Men's Game of Games.
Well, you didn't mention it before when we were just talking about Kingdom of Air.
Yeah.
Because last Thursday night, we all got a little bit mean to each other, didn't we?
We did, and we were in a kind of mood. We're like, we've got all these games we're going to play sent to us by these great developers, and we're just like, or we could just have a stupid amount of yelling fun. So we did the second one.
We did do that. We went back to a Dice Man favourite and a game that we have not talked about in around about 3.5 years because we featured this game on episode 2.
Absolutely. And, you know, when considering whether we should talk about it again tonight, we looked back and thought, you know, chances are anyone who's joined us probably since about episode maybe 50, you might go back and listen to a few episodes, but you're not going to go back and listen to 150 back catalogue episodes,
It didn't get good to about 90 odd anyway. I mean, nothing personal, lads, but, you know.
All right, so now we will talk about nothing personal, which is, look, it's by an accused murderer in Stephen Avery.
I'm sure he's never heard that before.
No. No, it's not. We are talking Stephen Avery, game designer, not Stephen Avery of Making a Murderer in, is it Manitowoc County?
Yeah, that close, yeah.
Sure. Exactly right. So we are talking about board game designer Stephen Avery and a little personality in our hobby, one Thomas Vassell.
I've heard of him.
Who may or may not be the king of the Dice Tower Network.
For a day.
Oh, there we go. So we are talking about their game, All About the Mafia. And I was listening to our episode last week, Leon, where you talked about the origins of Werewolf.
Yeah.
How Werewolf started as Mafia, you know, a game where it's all about rival, I guess, crime families and what have you. And this is the exact opposite, in that it's a game about the Mafia that had its origins in a game called Kremlin.
Yes.
Which is, again, based out of Russia. Mind blown.
It's just all coming together.
So, look, the premise of this game is that the capo is getting old and about to retire. Each of the players, of which there can be five, are competing crime families, and all you want to do is get the most respect, eh? You just want the most respect.
Why don't you go against the family? Dead fish and all.
So, I've got Godfather quotes up here, and I'm not afraid to use them.
Oh, God.
But this game is a great excuse for four or five people to sit around the table.
To play up to five.
It does.
Huh.
Hurl wild accusations at each other, make and break alliances really, really quickly, and it's all about who's going to have the most respect at the end of five turns. So the board itself is a pretty simple layout. You've got essentially a pyramid of your various gangsters and associates and what have you, and you start with a few at the bottom and they go up and up the pyramid until you get to the capo. Now, the way the game works is you start with number one, the commission, where you'll try and gain control of gangsters and the influence that they then have. You'll do that by basically playing cards. And cards have multiple uses. You can use cards for certain influence, and it might say play this card to put two influence on the bean counter or the capo or the person in the third spot or whatever the case may be. Or you might be able to play a card and just put one influence on any one gangster that you want to do that. Or you might play the card for its ability because it has a multiple ability use. Or you might just get rid of it and collect $8 because these cards can do so many things it is not funny.
There's literally like, I've got all the expansions with like 200 cards or something, and they're pretty much all different.
Yeah, and that's what I love. Look, it looks fantastic. It's got that great sort of cartoony mobster art, which looks really good on the table. And you're right, there are numerous expansions. It came with the Young Turks. There are designers' expansions. There are movie theme expansions. There are a whole bunch of little small deck expansions, which is great. So you've done the commission. The second thing is then you go through to the crew phase, and this is where you actually figure out who's got control of everything. So you start at the capo and you count. Well, Mark, your family's got two influence. Leon, you've got one. Garth, you got five.
I don't remember that happening.
It didn't happen in the actual game. But theoretically, it could. Yeah. And I get this chunky, presumably real gold capo ring.
Yeah, it's pretty pimp.
It is one of the best components in a board game.
It's true.
Because it is amazing. So this little gold ring that serves no other purpose apart from you get to wear it and basically tap it against the table and act like a bigwig, even though, Leon, we know you're not. You then go to phase three, which is the...
fingers were getting sore from wearing that ring.
Oh, shut up.
So damn long.
You then go, after you've assigned who controls each gangster from top to bottom, you go in the reverse order, which is, again, pretty common mechanic these days. Go one end to the other and then reverse it. And this is where you get to do your special abilities based on either the position of the gangster that you own or the special ability on their card. And it might be something like, you get to whack someone, or you get to take some money from someone, or you get to cancel their action, or you get to do numerous other abilities because, as you say, Leon, there are hundreds of cards in this game.
Yeah, so hundreds of different gangsters, hundreds of different cards that you can play to activate those gangsters. It's a whole thing.
Indeed. And what I really, really enjoy about this is almost exclusively the gangsters all have a slight tweak in the ability. They're almost not... you have multiple versions of the same one, and that's really, really cool.
Yes.
So you'll then go through and everyone will do their special ability, and that's where people will die and people will move position and you will get really, really cranky because everyone will have that round where you control zero people. Or you will control one person, and you know what someone will do? They will cancel the action of the one gangster you control because they hate you and nobody likes you.
Yeah.
And you will get really grumpy, Mark, won't you?
Absolutely, I did.
Everyone got really grumpy. It was great.
And I love it. Yeah. After you've done that, you'll then go around and draw some influence cards because, goddamn, you will need some more of those to be able to lay the smackdown on people. And then finally, you get to see who goes to prison because as soon as a gangster has a certain number of influence on them, it depends how many players there are, they will go to prison and that position will come up again.
Yeah, they get too well known for the 5-0 to just ignore.
Exactly right. Finally, you will fill those empty positions, do a bit of bureaucracy, rinse and repeat for 5 rounds, and oh my God, will you have a lot of fun doing this. If you have the right bunch of people.
Yeah. Big addendum, get the right bunch of people, best game ever. Wrong people, ooh, it's not going to be pretty.
And big hint, it's called Nothing Personal. Really, everything is personal in this game.
Yeah, this is not a game I would want to sit down with Donald Trump and play because I'm pretty sure I would start World Wars 3, 4 and 5 because you need to have a thick gaming skin for this to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
In essence, it's a really simple game. And what I really, really loved about the time we played it only a week or so ago is that none of us had played it for a long, long time. Yes. Leon, you'd probably been the player... who played it most recently, and it would have been 6 to 12 months ago.
Yeah, give or take.
Yeah. The rest of us, myself, Mark and Trent, hadn't played it for years.
Yeah.
But we ended up being able to breeze through this because the rule set is really simple. It has to be said that the first edition has problems with it in the rule book and the board, which the Dice Tower and the publishers made a great effort, and they sent out stickers and all of that. It's fantastic. Bit of a problem when it's Tom Vassell who designs it, who reviews a lot of games, you'd think he'd be able to get it right. But anyway, it plays a lot quicker than the first couple of games we played. We got this over and done with in 2 hours.
Yes. Yeah, very easily.
And it was the right amount of time. The delay I've had with talking about it before is that it's gone for maybe 3 hours. But we know that we shouldn't take anything personal, and you just move on and go to the next phase.
So this is a game that I played with my crew at home quite a few times, and we really enjoyed it, but we did end up kind of knocking it on the head and going a bit sour on it at one point, only because some of the rules of... because there's so many different cards and stuff, some of them do kind of clash a bit and a bit... how does this kind of... but in the game we had, that didn't come up at all. No. I mean, it could just be coincidence and, you know, but it's a game that we're definitely going to try again and play a lot more. But it's a game that has lots of just different... I mean, coming from a board game reviewer as well, he just put in lots of different mechanics that he liked. Like, who doesn't like cards that do different abilities? Who doesn't like be able to control different characters on the board? We didn't even mention the bidding and raising the ante when you're playing cards because you've got money in front of you and everyone gets to play a card for free. And then when it gets back round to the person who's the capo, they can go, well, I'm going to play another card, but it's going to cost everyone $5 now to do it. And then you just yell at that person, and it's brilliant. Oh, yell at me mostly, because what happened during that game, lads? We should probably talk about it, because it was pretty impressive.
Well, look, let's bring that up, because, you know, we obviously have some history playing games together, and particularly I'd say Trent and I have history of...
well, that's because Mark... Leon and I weren't born when you were going
when you two were going at it.
So Trent and I, we have a bit of antagonistic history there. And, of course, Trent hates to lose games, but particularly he hates to lose games to me. And so many times in the past, you know, I've beaten him, and I've beaten him by, like, 1 point or something like that.
Yes.
So his goal is always to beat me in the game. The funny thing in this game was I was not doing really well.
Yeah, but
Trent relaxed.
You do have to be able to accept completely, Mark, that your script in any game is, oh, I'm not doing well.
No,
well, I wasn't.
I don't know what I'm
Carl's
doing.
A big I fan wasn't. Of that as well. I don't get this. Oh, I'm winning by 20,000 points. I don't get it. Tonight.
So the particular thing that happened in this game was Trent and I and even Garth were locked in this sort of three-way struggle against each other, took our eyes off Leon, and before we knew it, you were like half a board ahead on the score.
I was doubled the points by like round three.
Mm.
And we need to put this in perspective. It's a five-game round. I was double the points of you guys by round three at the end of it. The next two rounds of the game, so like 40% of the game, I made about 2 points.
Yeah. Exactly. And yeah. that is something that I think is brilliant because I had the round where I controlled one little gangster. It was my one guy, my one hope to do something. And I think the position of the second guy, the second lowest position in the whole game, is to cancel an action. And one of you so-and-sos cancelled my one action.
Yeah.
So I sat there twiddling my thumbs as being able to do nothing. And again, I had the same experience, Leon, where I did have rounds where I moved 0 to 1 or 2 points. Because the way it works is you only go up influence if you can control the gangsters.
At that particular phase,
at that
phase,
particular
yeah.
point. And it is so much fun because each one of the gangsters, they have a certain value in influence and a certain value in dollars. But that influence might be negative.
Yes. Yeah.
And on the board, the various positions have different modifiers. So it might be, in the capo, for example, just a +4 modifier for reputation and for the dollars. So it might be when you line up the card with it, if the card says -2 and the actual position says +4, you're only going to get 2 reputation.
Yeah.
But you might get the right guy that's got 4 reputation and it ends up, you know, with the position, you get 8 reputation and $8 or $10 every single round.
Yeah, and the modifier might be like x2.
Correct.
But some of them are -2. So when you've got the guy that's like 0 and he gets on a position that has -2, and then multiplied by 4 for dollars, but his dollars are also 0, you're getting stuff all. And the hilarious thing was, so Leon was so far ahead,
yeah.
even in the last round where Trent and I had the opportunity to take points off someone, rather than take the points off Leon and knock him down where maybe you, Garth, might have been able to catch up to him, Trent and I were still stealing the points off each
because
other.
It was a battle for third and fourth,
yeah, it was, which
for
was
reasons
hilarious.
Best known to themselves. But yeah, well, that's how I got to where I got, because I had controlled like 2 gangsters the whole time. But those 2 gangsters happened to have 4 points and be on x2.
Yep.
And everyone's just kind of like, I only controls 2 gangsters, he'll be fine.
Indeed.
And then 3 turns later, it's like, oh, we should do something about this. And
yeah.
by the end of that time, it was already gone.
So, look, I mean, I also can't go beyond talking about the component quality of this game because it has some of the best component quality of any game. The cardboard money, you could set your time to it.
Yeah.
You know, the number of chips and the metal coins and the capo ring and all of the components are just absolutely second to none. This game is beautiful on the table.
Yeah, and apart from those couple of rule glitches, you know, the production quality of this thing was spot on. And, you know, got to give it to Tom Vassell and Steve Avery. And I think, was it Game Salute who did this one?
Yeah, it was.
And, like, the art on the cards as well. Like I said, the gangsters, I don't know the exact number, but it's well over 100 gangsters, and they're all different pictures, and they all look really cool. And as I said, the fact that they all do different things is really impressive. And on the other, like, action cards, there's little things on that, like with, like, knives in the background and, like, handguns and stuff like that. You just don't really pay that much attention, but then you look a bit closer and you see, almost kind of like the thing for Lisboa, where you look a little bit closer and go, ooh, look at this crazy little thing in the corner.
Exactly.
I didn't notice before. Little touches like that are what make things.
Well, even on the cards, it's, like, got newspaper articles in the background, and you can actually read a lot of them.
Yeah, so look, I really like it. I guess a criticism would be you've got so much fantastic art, but then you put all your influence tokens on top of it. You know, and look, there's no way around that, but it's just a shame to have the things covered. This game, though, I would play it right now.
Yeah,
the right group of people, I would play it right now. It is a very rules-light game for the most part because there are so many unique little abilities that each gangster has. You're always just referring to the cards and the board.
It's in the cards, Garth.
It is. It's not the rule book, Mark. Yeah. And it's great. Once you play it the first time, it will be a bit of a slog, but the second, yeah, third time will be so much better. And, oh, my God, is it rewarding to pull off that right whacking of a gangster or that right assassination attempt, or just when your plan falls into fruition. There are so few games that capture that, yeah, excitement.
So that is an important thing. Your second game of this will be much better than the first, because there are some things that are a bit fiddly, but you need to play it hopefully with somebody that's played it before and you'll love it. And I've said before, if we ever did a definitive Dice Men collectively, this is our top 10 games. I reckon this one's got a fair chance of being up there pretty high.
Yeah, well, yeah, look, this is just outside the top 100 thematically on BGG. It's probably because not many people don't play it enough times to get it in there, but it's certainly up there for a Mafia-style game.
Well, the last print was a couple of years ago, yeah, as well, and even before that, it was a couple of years before that. So if it was a thing that you could get readily all the time, I think it'd probably be quite a lot higher.
Yeah, and I'm curious, actually, to try sometime, and I know Trent's got the Kremlin,
yes,
which is the game that this sort of originated from, that Tom Vassell and Steve Avery wanted to, they liked that so much they wanted to improve it and made this game. So hopefully we can get that one to the table. But look, everything is personal these days, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, baby.
That was Johnny Cash with Personal Jesus. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. Now, Mark.
Or for those of you who didn't recognise, that was a cover of a Depeche Mode song, Garth. Did you recognise that?
I did, Mark.
Oh, there you go.
That was makes it more exciting, though.
It does.
Yeah. So now to go from one exciting thing to another, Mark, do you want to play some exciting music?
Nope, evidently not.
Maybe.
There we go. Get that free licensed music.
Oh, you got to love that Kickstarter.
Oh, that's fantastic. Johnny Cash doesn't do any of that, though, does he?
Yes.
Oh, what? Okay, Kickstarter. I tell you what, guys. There is a lot happening in the world of Kickstarter right now. Some amazing Aussie Kickstarters. Now, of course, be totally remiss of me not to mention Kingmaker Kingdom of Ayr that we spent a good 15 minutes talking about before. Now, people, Leon's Call, you've got to listen to it, because this game is now, must be close to $6,000 of the $9,500 that they're after. It's only got 14 days left to go. What's that, 60% or so of the way there, with about half the campaign through. So look, it may get there by itself, but why not get it storming over the line? Because it is such a great Aussie game that Alan Cheshire and Centennial Games have produced.
I've backed the version that gives you 5 copies of the game.
Yeah, wow.
And I'm going to happily give it out to people with presents for the rest of the year.
Yeah, well, hopefully some retailers get behind it as well. Yeah.
Well, someone's got a birthday coming up soon, Leon.
Oh, it's me.
Anyway, so look, get on that one, Kingdom of Ayr Kingmaker. We also mentioned a couple of other Aussie Kickstarters the other week, just briefly. Alas for the Awful Sea, the role-playing game set in Dickensian England, the 19th century, when you're the crew of a ship. That one's still going as well. They're getting close to 20,000, and they had a very, very low goal, so it's well and truly funded. That one's still got 13 days to go, so you've got plenty of time to get on that one. The other one, Garth, now I believe you've been talking to the people associated with this one, Garage Games, and this is Rain.
Yeah, I have been. And look, it had a big showing at CanCon recently, and I've plenty of chats with Garage Games, which have been fantastic. We have just received a review copy yesterday to have a chat. Now, look, it is a little bit more than 2K away. Peanuts away from its goal. It's got 5 days to go, so it's at virtually 9,000 of 11,000. I have not had the chance to read the rules and talk to you about this game. I would love to. It looks really great. It looks a lot of fun. Again, right up our alley in terms of you make alliances, you break alliances, you lie, you tell the truth. I'm really looking forward to getting this to the table.
Don't wait for our review, because the Kickstarter will be finished. So
exactly.
If that sounds intriguing at all, get on there and check it out for yourself. The last Aussie one, Judgment. Now, again, we mentioned this. This is the 54mm MOBA-style minis game. Again, it's about two-thirds of the way funded, 32 grand of 45. It's right on halfway, so 15 days to go. These minis look absolutely phenomenal, amazing, beautiful, and they're double the size of normal minis. So if you're into minis game, check this out. So there's four great Aussie Kickstarters. Now, let me talk about some others outside Kickstarter. And first, let me start with a project that hasn't even launched on Kickstarter yet, but they've got a pre-Kickstarter campaign.
What?
Okay.
So this is Thunderstone Quest from AEG. Now, this is the next iteration of Thunderstone, which was, it's a deck builder.
Yes.
And it was basically the first one to come out after Dominion, where it was like a deck builder with a theme. So dungeon delving and your party of adventures and you're equipping them. I had the original Thunderstone and a heap of expansions. And then they launched Thunderstone Advance, which was like another reboot. This one changes it up quite a bit, apparently. But I'm interested to see they've basically got a social media campaign where they're trying to get a certain number of likes and a certain number of newspaper sign-ups, newsletter sign-ups. And if they get them before the Kickstarter launches on the 21st of February, that will already unlock a mini quest for backers.
Hmm.
So I thought that was quite an interesting thing of like a pre-Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah, okay, wow.
Look, so many good ones. Speaking of the dungeon theme, Delve by Richard Lonius, of course, from Arkham Horror and a whole bunch of great games. His co-designer, Pete Shorey, and it's from Indie Boards and Cards. It's actually almost a re-theme of Carcassonne as a dungeon delve where it's a tile-laying game.
Really? Oh, interesting.
And instead of putting down meeples, you're putting down your adventurers, and then you've got cards for monsters, cards for treasure. But, yeah, quite Carcassonne-y, apparently. It looks really great. The art is almost is really nice. It's almost finished. You've got 6 days to go. It's more than double funded. It's raised almost $65,000, a bit over $65,000 now. They're only after $30,000. So, hey, if you like Carcassonne, if you like dungeon themes, this is something well and truly to check out.
And Indie Boards and Cards always do such a great quality of component as well. You know, they've done Coup and Resistance and a few other of those basically reiterations of these games.
Now, Garth, I've got to charge on because I'm running out of time. There's so much to cover here. Now, I've got six things to say to you. Competitive, deck building, dungeon crawling, miniatures, adventure, game.
Hey!
How about that? Our old friend...
Exotic?
Our old friend Andrew Parks, we love him, of Core Worlds, he's got Dungeon Alliance. Now, if I haven't got all your attention from those six things, it's $80 for the game, which includes a stack of miniatures. 17 is a stack. But if you don't want to pay 80, you can pay 120 and you get a full set of painted miniatures.
Ooh. Mark, I will pay you $10 if you can stack 17 miniatures on top of each other.
I'd give it a try. If you back it, Garth, I'll stack them, okay? You back, I'll stack. So for 120, you get a full set of painted miniatures plus the full set of unpainted miniatures. How cheap is that?
That's great. We should give them to Aiden.
This looks epic. It's only been launched a few days ago. They've got about 30,000. They're heading towards 75. So, it might not get there. But it looks really, really interesting. Check that one out. 21 days to go. One more dungeon-y type game. Orc Quest the card game. Be bad. Be strong. Be orc. 2+ players. It's sort of a bluffing battle card game. Some really sweet art. And it's got really some funny cards like, oh, try this. It's funny. And, oh, they're talking about your tiny... ... Or, hey, use the super mace of killing death. You know, orcs are always fun. This has got some really lovely art. It's €25 to Australia with €15 of shipping. So the shipping is a big chunk of it. But look, it's already more than double funded. They've raised €35,000. It's still got 18 days to go. Looks like a lot of fun. So check that one out. Enough of the dungeon theme. Let's talk pirates.
Arr.
Tortuga 1667. We love our seduction games, our social deduction games.
Well, to be fair.
Yeah. I mean, our social deduction games. This one plays 2-9 with secret loyalties and plotting.
There's no way this game can play 2. If it plays 9, it is going to suck at 2.
Well, they're...
Sure, Citadels.
Look, let's say you can have a minimum of 2, but obviously it's going to be better with more. Look, the presentation of this is amazing. The box is a book. It's a faux book. You open it up, you pull out your play mat, which is in there.
Yeah, and which is like mousepad material, isn't
it? Yeah, and your cards and your pawns and everything. And you're basically, you know, you're in the Caribbean with pirates, and you are taking sides, secret sides of, you know, the Dutch or the French or the English or the pirates. It looks really sweet. They've had a similar game called Salem about the Salem witch trials. They've already raised 240,000, sorry, 20, have I missed the number there?
No,
$240,000 they've raised on this game. It's amazing. So check it out. Again, we've got one more piratey game, British versus Pirates, which is a miniature ship tactical combat game based in the pirates world. It's $54 with a whole bunch of ship minis, and it's only $20 for shipping again.
Did he say ship minis?
Ship minis, yeah.
Ship,
okay.
Ship yeah,
minis.
Yeah, little ship minis, different types of ships.
They look
pretty
shippish.
Yeah, yeah. It's got 21 days to go. They've raised 25 of the 35,000 they need. But, you know, look, if you're into mini games and you like your ship combat, it is beautiful. One I'm going to mention, and then I'm going to not mention it again, Munchkin Shakespeare.
All right, move on.
Just when you thought it was safe to go back into the game store.
Move on.
And last and not least, Arkham Ritual. It's another social deduction game. I was very excited about this. I thought it was like an Arkham Werewolf, but really it's more like an Arkham Celebrity Head.
Okay.
So you have your one card and everyone knows what it is and you don't, and you're trying to work out what it is. But hey, it's already about to fund. It's only been going for 2 days. It's only $9 for the base set. So it could be a lot of fun. They are a whole bunch of amazing Kickstarters that are there. Lads, huh?
A lot of do. Thanks so much for listening. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Like some photos and follow us on Instagram, but not the photo of Leon and his wife in the web and stuff. Thank you so much for listening to the Dice Men Cometh. Check out dicemencometh.com. I think it is. We are out of here.
We are gone. Goodbye.
Oh, yeah.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.